all this stuff is, my answer always comes back to think clearly and coherently. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people, that's a frustrating answer because it's not enough of an answer, but it's the answer that has been, to me, it's the answer we avoided listening to for the last 40 years that I was active. You know, because we all had our own agenda, you know, our idealisms and all this and that, you know, because what we're up against in an evolutionary context, to understand what's going on now politically and economically and with the whole police state apparatus that's evolving and stuff, or that has evolved. In the 60s, the baby boom generation got a lot of attention historically because baby boom generation showed up and we were the majority, and we showed up and we were for all the right things, civil rights and feminism and or women's rights and earth and no war, and for all of the stuff. We were for all of the stuff, right? And we were the majority. But when that industrial ruling class, when they figured out what ignited us, all right, what kicked us loose. And what kicked us loose was that America at that time had the most affluent, our generation came into the most affluent generation that had ever probably existed in human history. All right? But because of the technology, materialism, see, and it was that abundance of it. And what it did was it made our generation more fair-minded. See, so more of our generation, well, why can't the blacks have some equality? Why can't we do, war? See, but it was because of economics. It was because of the affluency that the young generation had. See, and once they figured that out, they started the first massive redistribution of the wealth, and it was called an energy crisis, and it came in 1973, and they lined people up for blocks and miles to get gas, and they made them buy gas every other day. I mean, the price of gas went up from 25 cents to 60 cents. The price of bread went up. The price of everything went up. And then they had another one a few years later in the 70s. And then in the 80s, they had the savings and loan deregulation. And at the end of the 80s, that had been plundered for billions of dollars, right? Which puts the society generally further and further in debt. And then, see, in every decade, they've had a new one. Because they knew we were the majority. They knew we were the majority, but they needed us to be the labor force, all right, and to carry the lie for the next 40 years, all right. So they had economic redistribution of the wealth because they knew we would have families, we would become more economically dependent. See, so that manipulation has been going on all of this time, and what we're seeing going on now is just an extension of what started out then. Mm-hmm. All right, and practical realities, the police state that is evolving now, and they use Clinton to sell it here because Reagan, Bush couldn't, the NAFTA thing, all right, and the GATT, the General Agreement on Trades and Tariffs, which created the World Trade Organization, and back when I saw these things in the 90s, and I saw, hold it, this is what the GATT agreement means, this is what the World Trade Organization is, right? Then, and the GATT agreement just basically means everybody that's a part of the General Agreement on Trades and Tariffs, all right, everybody's a part of that. They agree that the World Trade Organization will be the final decision maker on any economic differences that come from the member nations, which in effect means that whatever sovereignty America is supposed to have has now become subservient, all right, to this. I mean, this applied mm-hmm. to all countries that went in, mm-hmm. and it meant as a rough example. It means that if some company in America couldn't make, or some huge corporation in America couldn't really make as much profits because of the environmental laws, so to speak, mm-hmm. as some country in Bulgaria, they could make, because they didn't have the same environmental thing, then this dispute goes to the World Trade Organization. Three members are the decision makers that are appointed by the corporate state, right? And then whatever their decision is, then that decision is final. So their decision can be, all right, that we have to lower the environmental standards here. All right, see, I mean, this is on paper. I'm not saying it's happening now, but it's, see, and I'm like, well, how the hell are they going to get away with this? See, but then, so they started passing little repressive laws since 1990, and then in 2001, with 9/11, then they got to put the whole package. Anybody from our generation, if you remember, they tried to pass Senate Bill 1 after Nixon had been tossed out of office, and the Patriot Act is Senate Bill 1, but it's a whole high-tech one. All right? See, so the deal was they made the agreement in the 90s, And then they were setting up their bureaucracy. They spent all this time setting up their bureaucracy. And in setting up their bureaucracy, they also needed to put their enforcement aspects in place. They needed to develop their enforcement aspects. Well, they've got their enforcement aspects in place now. Did you see the Boston bombing and how... this wasn't police. This was a military operation looking for these guys, right? You see? Huh? And
it's a military.
Yeah, no, see, and they showed it out public. And there's been many versions of it. There was one in San Francisco, some shooting on the freeway that closed down a neighborhood on an exit out there somewhere near Marin, all right? So now we see what their capabilities are. This is why I'm saying that it's important that we think, right? Because it's a much more dangerous beast than it was before. You know, because in my own personal opinion, there's an industrial ruling class. Communism, Nazism, socialism, all of these were experiments to see, and capitalism, all of these were experiments to see which would serve the industrial ruling class's need the best, right? And then, you know, so Russia had gulags. Right, but now they got FEMA camps. They just haven't filled them up yet. You know, they had that whole thing going on in Central America during with the Contras and all of that. When that was going on, they learned how, and that was a training ground how to deal with mass populations and stuff. You know, all right. But they activated the National Guard. See, here maybe they will not activate the National Guard, or they'll create something else and call it. But see, all of this stuff going on. So this is why it's important for whatever it is we're going to get. Our young people are going to get involved in. I think it's important for them to, number one, have a sense of their own self-worth, that they're human beings and know that there's nothing wrong with them, right? Right? And to think. See, and I think it's important as a part of the sense of self-worth, you know, to understand it, not to confuse doing something wrong and thinking something's wrong with you, or believing something's wrong with you. Because a lot of times, because we were imprinted to believe that there's something wrong with us, it's like getting traumatized. You get and I call it a form of trauma. But however the trauma comes, you get the traumatized, the victim of trauma, what do? They react out certain characteristics of the victimization and the trauma. Some kind of way they react it out. All right? And every time they react it out, it makes them feel, blame themselves even more, that there's something even more wrong with them. Right? And this is what I'm saying. It's important to recognize what happened. Right, to recognize it, then you can learn from it and see from it, right? Because what has happened is we've all been traumatized, and then it's like throwing a stone in a pond, ripple effect. We've all been traumatized, so it affects our perception and our behavior, our reaction. So we do things now that we judge ourselves for, all right? And that's how this whole thing, that's why it happens like that does. So that way we'll always be judging ourselves and never really seeing ourselves. And that's what... So that's why it's like, sometimes it's important to understand that it's okay that there's nothing wrong with us because we did wrong things. Because 99% of the time, the wrong things were a reaction to something, all right? And I'm not saying this to justify continuing to do wrong things, but I'm saying if we understood that, it would help us to see ourselves. And I think especially for younger people, all right? Because I think it's very important, because it's crucial that young people have it explained to them in some kind of way so that they start to think about that there isn't something wrong with them. Because I think that's the core of everyone.
They're doing what they're doing because they're supposed to do it based on how they live, what's been presented to them, how they're being educated, how their environment is.
Or the lack of.
They're doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing.
Lack of education.
But we want them to think. We want to inspire them to question. We want to inspire them to look it up for yourself. Don't believe me. But I'm trying to give you my experience, my history, my thoughts, ideas. And hopefully it will give you an opportunity to use the resources you got, your technology. You know, and if they don't have technology, we help them get technology. You know, Googling, computers, all that. Look this stuff up. You know, and then let's have a discussion. And I like that. Not judge them.
We don't judge them.
It opens the door.
We're not respecting our Creator when we start judging.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's that basic to me. You know, no, that's not. You know, we weren't put here to be judges. No, well, we're put here to see. We're put here to recognize.
I was asked by a teacher to come to a class and talk about marijuana. And the first thing the student asked me, is it bad for them? And I said, no. And she almost fell off the chair. And I said, well, it's not. If you need it. A person that has glaucoma and they need to get release the pressure in their eyes, they smoke marijuana. Somebody that had AIDS, they kept throwing up food. It helps you to put it down. You know, so if it's bringing balance to you, it's increasing your life, and that's it, hey. But in this society, you've got to recognize that there's laws against it. UCSC, they have marijuana day, right?
Yeah.
Thousands of people go up there. A young man that we work with, he goes down, lots of them walk down the street, and bam, he gets picked up, and he's up in juvenile hall.
Yep.
The same day that they had thousands of people that were just, hey, go for it. So, again, this is our reality. We have to deal with the reality. Yeah. Okay, maybe it's not good, maybe it's not good for you or not bad for you. Do you need it? Or at this time, you're on probation. You know?
Hmm.
You know? So, you know, yeah, we have a, you know, for me, you know, I look and I hear your stories and stuff, and I hear, you know, having the circling, we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. We are. You know, because this has been given to us. And, but again, we have some consciousness. We have history. How do we use that in order to be more mindful of what we do every day? And also to combat that which we know is not right. The injustices, the inequalities in the society, and the things that keep being and going on and keep being perpetuated. You know, how do we change that? I like the idea in our community. You know, I say, you know, sometimes we may say, well, where are you spending your money? Do you really got to go there and put that money in McDonald's?
Right.
To the others, you know? And we're always saying that we ain't got much. Why? What else can we do? So sometimes we have a cooking class.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when they eat, especially in the morning, they have a whole different attitude.
That's right. Hey, Bogota, Colombia, not so long ago, maybe, what, 3 or 4 years ago? They had a general strike where nobody drove cars for a whole day in Bogota. Do you remember that? I mean, that's the kind of thing you're talking about that would make more impact if you could think it out and get people to do it.
That's right, because it's like, because I came with this thing about not spending any money on one day, right? And it's,
right.
But it's because that's a form of that.
Right.
Because when you look at it, everything's about energy, but it's also about money. Right? And protesting, I mean, and I'm not trying to discourage, because I know you got to put body politic into it sometime. But to just protest, the way, number one, you buy magic markers to make your signs, right? You buy your bottles of water, and you buy your snack food, and you take, right? You get all your stuff, your little outfit to go. So you're spending money. You spend huge amounts of money get spent to get to the protest, you know, beating the oppressor economy. Then the cops get to come in and beat you up, right? They get to practice their little tactical games and stuff, you know, and they'll always send someone in to justify them being able to come in, because generally the rogue elements are plants,
right.
You know, they used to call them red squads back in our day, right? But they're red squads, in it, which you, you know, that police can justify coming in and things like that. So these kinds of things where we're not cooperating by feeding into that system. And I think the first thing, though, the first thing to start talking with young people about, or anybody about, but with young people, is number one, is know who you are and trust yourself, right? And don't believe them. But think. See, not just enough to say don't believe, right? Because they already don't believe, but it's okay not to believe. But here, but think. Here, really think. Because sometimes we believe we don't believe something, but we do. But I mean, right? But the deal is, but I mean, see, but when we activate our intelligence to thinking and just know within our own heads and really thinking, that stuff does get sorted out.
Is there a way to teach someone to think?
Can I get an
idea? Yeah, I have to think about that.
Okay.
First of all, I want to thank everybody, you know, to be around the circle and
the one example I can give you is, you know, I had a group of students in Concord, California that were dressing all in black. So I took a picture of them and I showed it to them. Because they were all wearing hoodies, they were all dividing themselves from the rest of the school. And this is the group that was getting targeted to from the whole school, not only from the teachers, but from their own peers. So I just turned around and I showed them the picture of themselves standing in the corner in all black. I got them to see that they were looking like if they were at a funeral. Mm. But it took me to take that picture. It took me not to turn my back on them, you know?
Why were they dressing in black?
Because that's the in thing.
Is their in thing?
Yeah, that's what's up, you know, that's what's in style.
It's cool.
Yeah. You know, that's what's cool.
But you got them to think about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that's what we could afford. You know, this the hoodie is the only thing that's going to keep me warm, and that's the only thing I could afford at the time. For me, it's been really hard to get the adults to really listen, because I think as youngster, as person being young, we already know what we need. You know, we've been getting shot at, chased for a very long time, and you know, I have these guys at the hall and at the jail. I mean, all we need is a tattoo removal program for them to get a job. And we can't find the funding, we can't help the necessary needs to get that accomplished. And I have 4 to 5 guys, you know, with jobs already waiting for them, but they won't get them because of the tattoos.
How much does it cost for one guy?
I really don't know. I mean, for us, it's really... It's thinking, how do we take that? Because we could go and go to Dominican and get that removed. But how can we take it and make it our own? I don't want to go to Dominican. I want somebody that has been through the process to remove my tattoo. So it's not only the machine, but how do we get a center for ourselves? Because right. That same person that got his tattoo removed can also remove somebody else's. And he has a new job, too.
We need to go further back. We need to get before the tattoo comes. Need to address that situation.
So we have, I mean, and the ways
one of the reasons. One of the reasons, you know, someone was saying you work with the youth and you get along.
Yeah.
And you're successful. Why are you successful?
Because we're on the street.
No. Why are you successful when you're working with those youth? Why? Because you're working with small numbers. How many are you working with? 4, 5? Are you working with 35 at a time?
I think more because I'm also on the street. I'm also at home. I'm at my church,
right?
You know, but, so and it's not only the kids that I'm working with; it's also the people that don't have tattoos because they're the ones calling the shots. They're the ones that are voting for these laws that are getting these kids caught up in these long sentences. So it's really it's not only the kids that I work with; it's all around, right. And it's educating the adults too what that tattoo removal program is going to do to that kid.
And sometimes it's just moments of success.
Yeah,
it's not like because if it was that we were successful, then hey. Boom, we move on. No, we get little things.
Little stuck, victories.
Yeah. Little ones. And hopefully these are planting seeds that, again, will blossom or will be shared.
What I was trying to get to is that if we can start at the beginning and move people into small groups rather than these large mega groups that we put them in, we have a better chance of not having these problems.
Well, I look at it like this. When somebody has an illness, it's acute, and you have to deal with that. They got a fever. You got to break the fever. But there's a root cause of that problem. Mm-hmm. And if we don't deal with that root cause, it will, boom, come right back up. And it could come up worse or take them out.
The root cause is they think there's something wrong with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I think one of the things that we do, because we deal with generational usage of heroin addiction, we're known as the heroin capital of the country. And so you will have parents, grandparents, grandchildren, great-grandchildren in the same room using. And one of the things that we do at the camp, because it isn't an easy process, you know, I think we're all trying to be creative and think about what will make it better or what will lessen the pain and the hurt that has been inflicted, because it's all of that that comes with it. And I think one of the things that we deal with our young people is that, first of all, they have to know that they're safe And they have to know that their environment is safe. And they have to feel comfortable with the people that are around them. And feel that, you know, that they're not going to be judged. Which is really important. And one of the things that we've done at the camp is that parents are encouraged to come and contribute some hours to the camp because they pay no money, nobody, to come. But I don't encourage a lot of parents to come. And the reason is that, like I tell the parents, if the discipline has to come, it has to come from the collective, not from the parent.
Here.
Okay. And I think that much of what happens is that when you don't entrust young people to have the ability to make those decisions, to be able to implement those decisions, you know, because of our adultism and our knowledge and knowing, and you know, it was like I was saying earlier,
that's a good newism.
You know, that one of the things is that our knowledge is only to help you, not to say it's the solution. The only thing we want to do is to keep you in some ways from making the same mistake, but not take it away from you, because that's your cross. We can't take that process away, but what we can do is share what we do have. And I think that's important. And listen to young people when they say, we want a tattoo place, but we want it to come and be somewhere where it's safe and people feel safe to be able to go there and say, this person's going to remove this tattoo in a good way, without being judgmental of why it got there or how it got there, right, or things like that. So I think there's an important a part that we need to go to and asking ourselves those questions. And I think you tapped on them, and that is part of the human element of who we are. Because I think when we don't trust and we don't know ourselves, then we project those onto others.
Uh-huh.
And so I try to keep the adults from coming to the camp so that they do not project their isms of all the isms onto young people. So I think that getting back to what you're talking about is that we have to go way back to that part of who we are as human, and to be able to think and allow.
We have to get back to the being part of human.
Yeah.
That's what we have to do.
Well, the adults, I say this as advisedly as I can, the adults think that they have to compete with the kids for my wife's attention. So what happened was the kids, you know, needed the time to be safe, and the adults were coming in there going, hey, I thought you were going to work on our problems. And so actually, you know, when our mentor told us, you know, you might have to go through losing all the adults just so you can, you know, be able to be there with the kids. The thing that got me immediately interested in what Felipe was saying, though, is there's so many impediments, whether it's tattoo removal, for somebody to get a job. You know, so when you're talking about body deployment, just to be able to do collective labor, I mean, even just to have people working together. I mean, imagine if you could clean the forest so these things wouldn't burn down to the ground. Now, that's a bigger question, but it's a smaller groups of people. You know, if I had four or five guys, you know, in our forest to help me, you know, so they go through this process of healing and being safe and then being able to think, and then if they can get their tattoo removed, they might be able to get a job. And if I had four or five guys in the forest, you know, I'd be a happy camper. But the other thing I wanted to say was Does that mean, like, if you like other people, does that mean you like yourself?
Not necessarily.
Right.
But liking ourselves is really something that
takes a lot of work.
Well, I like myself, and I'm lazy.
I like myself.
But the deal is, but somehow that, but I say it's in talking with young people. I mean anybody, but there's a focus on young people. This is what I'm saying is this is about reaching some kind of understanding that there's nothing wrong with them,
yeah.
And not to confuse some of their behaviors. All right, that there is something wrong with them, that it is okay to like themselves. But I think it's something that kind of gets communicated, you know, and in a lot of ways, I think things that we have to say to young people, it's all in how it's said. If we say it in a way that makes sense, all right, if we speak to them in a way that will make sense to them, all right, some of them will get it and some of them won't. But this is just, I mean, this is the math of reality, right? But you say it to them, you just keep saying what makes sense to them, all right, looking for the ones that do get it. Because the ones that get it, then they'll make sense to somebody else. I mean, we're dealing with that basic of a mathematical equation. But I think that it spreads more quickly than we tend to give it credit for. Yes.
And you're right. I mean, because a lot of these kids, they either use hip-hop now, poetry, tagging, graffiti art, and it is. It's one person's going to get one thing, but that person's going to project it out to
That's
the
right.
rest of them in their way, and they're going to get it. It's been working since, hip-hop for me has educated me where reading and writing didn't.
Yeah.
And I've been able to educate myself about politics through the music, through the art. So it's having these kids to realize that they have that gift, no matter what it is. I think one of the things that has made a difference is really understanding that when I found that gift to just stick with it, because many times, you know, I DJ, and my dad, the first thing my dad told me was, what are you going to do with that? How are you going to make a living with that? And it wasn't until years later that I traveled and I did make a living off of that, he realized, wow, he made a mistake by telling me that.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we support those kids that do have that art, because they could probably talk to that kid that I couldn't.
Well, it's getting past 5:30. We have food, so we can continue the discussion. But just one thing I wanted to say, that I think what I value and what John's saying is that we don't know how change is going to happen. If we knew, it would have already have happened. But if you take step by step, you think we know how change is going to happen. There's forces that are going to block that. So we don't know how it's going to happen. So that's why we have to think and be creative and be open to anything. Because we don't know where it's going to come from. When I got involved with the Grange, who would ever have thought the Grange would become a progressive center for community activities?
It's become a community.
Its history in the last at least 50, 60 years has been pretty reactionary.
Well, it didn't start off.
Yeah, I mean, 100 years ago, it was very progressive.
It was progressive.
It became a very conservative, white-only organization.
Yeah. I mean, how did that happen?
Yeah, so just being open to anything, whether it's hip-hop or the Grange, I mean, we don't know where change is going to come from. We have to be thinking and creative and be open to...
And one thing I would add to that about creative, that I think about explaining to young people, for anybody, but if we're speaking in terms of young, is that understanding that their creative mind is always active. All right, and it's how the creative mind is being used. If we're using the creative mind to create negative images of us because we've been told we're not good enough, all right, see, so no one, so guys, a lot of them will say, well, we'll hear that, well, I'm not a creative person, I'm not a thing. But the deal is, we all are, we create our own reality every day on how we how we were imprinted to perceive reality. So if if a lot of time is devoted, the creative intelligence is put into thinking I'm not any good or I'm not good enough or this or that. See, so I think it's important to explore that, start exploring that dialogue with them about our, everybody is creative. It's just how do we create and what do we create? Yes.
Well, a quick one. It can happen really fast any time. I was looking for a CD player at Abbott's Thrift, and there were two little kids down on the floor near the electronics section. And I was just standing there like this. You know, I'd been looking in the shelves here, and they were looking at a scuba mask. One little kid was about six, and his brother was four. And his little brother says, "What's that for?" And the older one said, "That's so you can be safe." And I went, "I'm either going to puke or say something." And I said, "Hey, you know what that's for?" And he looked up and said, "No, what's that for?" And I said, "That is so you can breathe underwater." And I walked off. I'm just like, 6 foot honky. But what I heard behind me was the little kid said, "What is it for?" And the older one said, "It's so you can breathe underwater." I was like, made my day.
Also, John's got a few CDs, and this is what he talks about on here is a lot about what he's been talking about today. So they're $10, so it's worth getting.
Let's get it.
Well, I made as much sense as I could, all right? And whatever I said did, and whatever I said didn't make sense, keep it to yourself, because I don't want to hear it. If it didn't make sense, I don't want to hear it.
Made a lot of sense. We'll evolve to it.
You know, we don't get much of these kind of discussions back home. You know, we live in the Santa Fe world. We call it Santa Fe. And our part of the world has changed a lot. And so, and we don't, a lot of people come to our property, our home. As a matter of fact, I have some people that are there from Canada right now, waiting for me to get home. But this has been, you know, this has been really nice to be able to sit here and talk with people that have been involved in the movement for a long time. You know, because you don't get that. And you don't see these discussions a lot anymore. I remember in the 70s and early 80s that we would have these discussions and people would think sometimes. And it was nice. So this has been, you know, this has really been nice. It's been really nice and really nice to share with you and to hear. I've always heard your music.
That's good. I like that.
And I say, all right. You know, so it's nice.
I had a thought, John, on electromagnetic theory. And I used to study this guy named Tesla.
Well, Tesla was the man. Yeah.
I thought maybe you were. Yeah. So yeah. When you get a when the earth and the brain get in resonance, because funnily enough, the ionosphere cavity resonates at 7.5 hertz, which is also alpha frequency in the brain, because the ionosphere cavity, it's called the Schumann resonance. So a guy named Schumann, you know, back in the 50s figured this out. And so there becomes a, you know, they call it the brainwave entrainment to the Earth's ionosphere's wave guide. And so what I'm thinking, of course, is when you get your clear and present thinking, you know, in phase, there's a phenomenon called the exponential. And so when two waves get resonant, the free electrons that are in the ambient atmosphere. I'm kind of using some old Tesla language. They start stacking into the resonance, and it starts to take off exponentially. So let's hope as we can do this that we start to see some of those effects.
Well, everything's about frequencies.
Right.
We tune our own frequency, because what we're being electrically jammed with all the electronics. They're altering the frequencies.
That's right.
Yep. I mean, it's actually like, they're harnessing the energy.
That's the first thing I studied, actually, when I got to Congressman Pete McCloskey's office in 1977 in D.C., was he had me on the fact that the BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit System, was like an electrified cable in the ground, and it was interfering with the magnetic fields of nature and the surrounding area. So one of the Stanford scientists had put a magnetometer on a tree to see what would happen to the tree's receptivity to the extra low frequency waves that it was receiving from space. Oak trees, of course. So let's go druid with that.
Right? I'm with you. So they take off. What does that mean? Like, when they exponentially pile up and they take off, what does take off mean?
Oh, no, I was just saying...
What does that mean? What happens?
Well, you mean when the wave exponentially increases?
The
free electrons start stacking onto the base wave, and so it increases the...
And then what? Then you get more alpha?
I guess it depends. on the frequency.
Okay.
But you could get a multi-wave effect. It just depends what you've got in there. Mm-hmm. Okay. But
we were able to communicate a long distance.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. Before they interfered.
Yeah, before the interference. That's right.
The web kind of shows us what we can do when the web goes down. We could do all that, right, without the web.
Well, we did it without, web is just an artificial system of what we already did.
And we'll do it, hopefully.
Before they started telling us you need to use the web, the text, and everything.
To think.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Now?
Yeah, now.
Say now. Now or never.
She's so cute.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, Dad.
Commander.
Yes, come in, number one. Sit down.